Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your ghostly host, Joe Shortridge. I don't know. I can't talk today, but I can't talk every other day. But we have a very special guest in the house today. He's not actually in the house.
No.
He's calling in because we can't be together.
Right. Damn COVID.
I know.
In the virtual house.
Yes.
That's right. Motor City rock legend. It's
That's
Razor
it.
Ray. Reyes, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Hey, happy holidays. And once again, thanks for having me on again.
Oh, man, I tell you.
Nice to hear your voices.
Yeah, it, sure.
I know Dana's going to be very excited because she's been hounding me for, well, I mean, over a year now that she's like, when are you going to have Ray on? I'm like, when are you? I said, well, I talked to him, but it was about a year ago.
Now he gets to reach out to you from beyond.
Yeah.
For sure. Definitely.
You know, it's the thing. It's, we just celebrated the 1 year anniversary of her and Lisa.
Yeah.
Passing on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just been, it's insane. You know, it's like very surreal still. And, mm-hmm. After a year, it's I've had some time to be able to kind of sit with it. But honestly, I sit inside that home where everything happened. And sometimes I just wonder, I'm like, man, I don't even wonder. I just say, thank you, Lord, mm-hmm. for giving me the strength to be in this house.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't, I tried to, be other places afterwards and I'd stay over at friends' houses. And I'd wake up in the middle of the night, kind of like a panic attack, just mm-hmm. the sense of like, I need to go home,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, just being there very much gives me the sense that, you know, she is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, our hearts and thoughts were with you throughout the whole year. We definitely were supporting you from our end.
Yeah.
No, I definitely, you know, appreciate that very much. I mean, that's, it's an incredible thing life is, you know, and when you meet someone like Dana, that is someone to me had just very much had you didn't realize what an angel she actually mm-hmm. was until she actually became one.
Yeah.
And we, you know, there have been some pretty intense little paranormal experiences around the house where, you know, after everything that went down, you know, the need for having to have the house blessed mm-hmm. was, you know, priority number one. Actually, priority number one was even, you know, before anything at all, was getting to a point of forgiveness, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to forgive and not be angry, because right. understanding that those types of emotions that you hold on to are really just toxic for every relationship that you have at that point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
You know, and I just did not want to see any of my relationships, you know, go that route.
Yeah.
You know, especially with my kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, you know, so I was like, I can't be any good to them. You know, I can't, you know, or to anybody else if I'm not good with me first.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And getting to that point of getting good with me was having to forgive, you know,
mm-hmm.
forgive and let God take care of it, you know?
Yeah.
And he
not hold on to that anger. Mm-hmm. And it was a very huge step for me. I mean, I felt it right away, within a prayer in that evening of coming home to that was, it was very, very effective. Mm-hmm. I mean, prayers really do work, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I know that when you're going through your other experience that we're going to be talking about, you definitely had a lot of people praying for you, and you knew it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and you know, it's funny too because you know I'm a, you know, have been involved with the near-death experience friends group on Facebook, and it's a really, like, compared to like all of the, you know, groups I've been involved with, this one is actually a very cool one because it doesn't get too lefty or too righty with mm-hmm. it. It's yeah. not too political. This is in it, you know, a lot of people are coming in with genuine questions, and you know, and it's nice to be able to have like some insight and some perspective to something like this.
Yeah. So let's do this. Before we get into that, let's introduce you to our listener and let them know a little bit about you. Cause all the years I've known you, I mean, I've only met you, I think, once or twice at some of the RIF Christmas shows and stuff. And I'm sure I met you out, you know, during the shows, but
let's dig into you.
Let's go way back. Oh,
my God, go way back. Well, here I am, you know, Razor Ray. Been doing the Detroit music scene and playing guitar and, with various bands throughout the ages. You know, some of these bands you might have heard of that I was involved with, Kid Rock and St. Clown Posse, the band Harm's Way and Motown Rage. So I've been part of this whole Detroit music scene too, since like the, you know.
What do you think makes Detroit's music scene so unique and so genuine?
It's not East Coast mm-hmm. and it's not West Coast. It's got quite a bit of both. Mm-hmm. But it also takes a lot of pride in just having, you know, just roots in Motown, you know, like that's not East Coast. That is not West Coast. Right. That is like straight up, like, you know, Detroit, you know, and there's that, right? Like you think of Motown and that's like, you know, I was born and raised in Corpus Christi, Texas, mm-hmm. Till I was 15 going on 16. And I moved up to Detroit, Novi, Michigan, in fact, which is like a, you know, just a little suburb, mm-hmm. you know, it starts to get a little farmy in that area where it gets a little rural, but it was definitely a culture shock, to say the least, mm-hmm. you know, going from like an 80-90% Hispanic population to like, you know, straight up, where are all the vatos?
Right.
We're going to get a real authentic taco, you know,
right,
you know, and then I learned about Southwest Detroit, you know, and I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, cool there. But, you know, so I've been part of the whole music scene for really quite a long time and, going through, various bands mm-hmm. playing in groups that were always like, just like on the verge of like semi, you know, like getting on the verge of like, national exposure.
Everything is ruined. Not really.
So
now, so with all of that, that was really kind of a, you know, chasing the whole rock star thing, you know, for a while, mm-hmm, and having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
But it got to the point where doing shows, you know, you started to see other things happening, and for me, it really kind of hit home is, you know, getting a major break lined up with Dimebag Darrell from Pantera. Got mm-hmm. you know, rest his soul,
yes,
him and his brother Vinny. But we had gotten to that point where they were doing their new band Damage Plan, and we were doing some shows with them, with my band Motown Rage, and it you know, Dimes was like, dude, I want to, you know, bring you guys to my studio, like, you know, done this for a long time, and mm-hmm. you know, want to bring you guys and record some of these songs and shoot them to my people, and you know, just kind of get you guys going. And it was just one of those things that I just could not believe my ears, and was very much just along the lines of like, wow, this is actually kind of finally might start to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just gave him this big hug. I'm like, dude, you know, I have no idea how long I've been waiting for you to say something like this, to hear you say this. And, you know, it was like, it was very much on the way to things to happen. And
now, is it true?
A month later, he was killed. That's he was killed, and that whole thing at that point was very much like, I don't ever want to go through this with my kids and have to have them deal with something like this. He was one of those guys who was genuinely nice to everybody that, you know, he was approachable.
Yeah,
and
for that's something what I was
like that
say.
To happen to him, it was just one of those things that just like, that's really not what I think I'd want to do. You know, that's not for me.
It's, you know, hanging out with, like, you know, my best friend Dana Forrester with Sixth Sense Crush and Dead and Five.
Who doesn't?
And that's
love
who I
Dana?
Meant when I said Dana's been yelling at me to get you on. You know, that's who I meant. But it's the Detroit music scene. It's like a huge family.
It really is. And it really, really is.
Yeah, and I never realized that till I started hanging out with her, you know?
Yep. I mean, and it's true, because, I mean, there is, like, a lot of love in the scene, you know? Mm-hmm. People that love each other just like a brother or a sister.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, and just like that, like, you know, time might fly before you get a chance to even catch up. Like, I know it's been a while since I've seen Dana.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last time I might have seen her, I think I was just kind of walking by the Lucky Monkey Tattoo Parlor, in Ann Arbor. You know, and shout out to Lucky Monkey. Those guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. You know, and this is like, okay, like, all right, we're talking about her. One of my favorite artists that she has working for her right now, Nate DeJarnese, who is just this incredible tattoo artist. Like, you know, he's a former guitar student of mine. To see him grow up from like this little 12, 13-year-old kid to, you know, to a grown man and doing his thing and, you know, getting a job with Dana. I was like, I remember when he was first telling me about that. I was like, you know, you got this, you know? And so, yeah, it is. It's very much a super, the entire Detroit, you know, art scene is very, very tight, you know, not just with the musicians, but with artists, you know, tattoo artists, dancers, you know, I mean, there's just, you know, actors, there's a you know, the whole comedians. And then you have a whole level of like a lot of people that are just like yourselves and myself too, you know, like podcast celebrities, you know, doing, you know,
we
shows
don't know
like
any
that.
Of those.
You know, it's a rough life, I hear.
It is. Right. Now, I need to know the story. How did you get the name Razor Ray?
The name Razor Ray came out when I was doing this TV show in the 90s, mid-90s. Called Video Underground. It was like a public access show in Lansing, Michigan. And, you know, we were doing like a Headbangers Ball type of thing.
Okay.
We were, you know, totally playing all these heavy metal videos and really playing them, playing a lot of the stuff that MTV wouldn't, you know. And so as a result, we got a lot of love from a lot of different labels and a lot of different production companies as a result. And we were able to land some really cool interviews. Like, you know, I got to interview, you know, Rob Zombie when he was, you know, White Zombie back then.
Wow.
Anthrax. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite interviews, hands down, was Pantera. You know, interviewing them just as Vulgar Display of Power came out, right when that album came out. So they were just like on their big, you know, like rise to, you know, to some fame. And it was during that time that I had befriended Dimebag Darrell. And basically, he ended up tagging me with the name Razor Ray. As I told him, I was like, hey, dude, I'm thinking about, you know, I'm doing this TV show, kind of need a, you know, stage name to go with this, thinking about Razor Ray. You know, what do you think, you know? And it was funny because we were actually, it was at a Pantera in-store. They were signing autographs at a, you know, music store in Detroit. And he was just like pulling on his pink beard, and he's like, "Raise a ray." He's like, "Dude, I like it. I like it a lot, you know." And it was awesome. Funny because then right at that point, some kid, like, you know, gets his autograph, and then thinking that I'm in Pantera because I'm sitting next to Don, grabs my autograph too, you know. So I'm like, "Razor Ray, dude, I'm not in Pantera."
And the legend was born.
Yes. And that's how it started. So, yeah, so, awesome. So Razor Ray, it's been since then. Great. So yeah, since, wow, God.
That's amazing.
Early 90s.
I have some I have some nicknames, but I don't say them on the air. No, I'm kidding.
Okay, we'll wait for the break.
Okay. All right. No, but
like, but what I was saying too is just like, you know, doing that TV show Video Underground for a few years really kind of prepped me up for doing what I was trying to do next, which was in 1999 I went to MTV for the Wanna Be a VJ 2 contest.
Nice.
And it was such a surreal experience to land on the top 12, you know, VJ wannabes, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like I'm on TRL, you know, like screaming kids outside the window, like celebrity judges, Carson Daly, you know, it was like, no way, here we are, MTV. And it was, you know, it was pretty close. I mean, like, I was the only guy that came out and brought a devil puppet.
Nice.
That's another, and that's a totally different story. Totally, like another chapter there. But,
that rabbit
you know,
hole.
I don't know if you've ever heard of the marionette puppet show from Detroit called the Geppetto Files.
Oh yeah, Ted. Yeah, I love Ted, man.
Well, okay, well then, all right then. You see, this is how we were just talking. Like, this whole scene is so, you know, everybody's related. Mm-hmm. You know, Ted's an old roommate of mine, and I used to do, you know, he brought me in to the puppet show by bringing in music. You know, he wanted me to do music for him. And then he's like, "Dude, you have the perfect voice for the devil. Like, you know, I want you to be Lou." So I became Lou for the Geppetto Files.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And so we had a lot of fun with it. We insane stuff that we did with Lou, and you know, Ted would do the voice of Scratch, where he was like a little minion devil, and we just had our own little talk show. We did stupid, said the most craziest stuff. But I told Ted, you know, in 99, I was like, "Dude, if you let me take this puppet, I guarantee you we'll get some airtime on it, because they're going to be looking at this like, you know, hype." Mm-hmm. And sure enough, you know, went in, did my thing, and got the phone call at midnight. We're like, "Dude, you didn't leave, did you?" I'm like, "No, I'm still in town." I'm like, "Good. Like, you got the puppet?" I'm like, "Absolutely." Like, "Bring it tomorrow." And, you know, so it was like a whole day of being at MTV from like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning to like 2 o'clock the following morning.
Wow.
You know,
that's
like
crazy.
Just stayed there and saw how that whole machine ran.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which was pretty cool, especially considering like where it is now. Like, it's completely a different machine now.
Yeah.
Like, that was right around the time when things were starting to transition from like videos to like reality TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on MTV.
Completely scripted reality TV.
It was honestly, 1999 was probably like the last golden year for MTV, just as though they were about to, like, you know, at that point, TRL started to lose its steam and they weren't playing as much videos anymore.
Yeah.
It was all about, you know, the real world.
Exactly. Real puppet world.
Oh. Right, exactly. So, you know, so I brought the show, you know, I brought the puppet there, and, you know, that was another, like, you know, another brush of, like, you know, some of that fame and fortune that we kind of all try to set out for at times. And, you know, it's crazy because everything that has happened, you know, that led up to me for, you know, December, you know, I should say February 19th, 2013, which was the night that I had my brain aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was with Dana, and we were in bed. And, you know, so one moment I'm on the bed, and then the next moment I'm on the floor and completely just, you know, disoriented, not understanding what was going on. Mm-hmm. And with this the most amazing, like, just the heaviest pain that you could imagine. Imagine just like the sharpest pain of like a knife going right through your skull.
Dang.
That was about as close as I could imagine to describe. Mm-hmm. It was quite painful. And you know, leading into that night, we had to go to 3 different hospitals that night because the first hospital equipment was not available. Second hospital equipment broke down just before they were going to do the procedure of drilling holes into my head.
Oh my goodness.
And so, yeah, and then at the third hospital, I contracted spinal meningitis, so I had to stay there for a good 20 days, you know, and then not able to drive for another 30 days after that. So it was almost like 2 months of, like, no work, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, but I remember going into, you know, into my experience where it was just a lot of, you know, a lot of just the confusion, a mm-hmm. lot of like what's going on, and the realization of like, wow, this is it. You know, mm-hmm. it's an amazing feeling to be right here right now of like gratitude.
Yeah.
To think back then and think, wow, I really thought that. I really thought, wow, this is it.
Yeah.
This is it, God. Like, and I'm like, well, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go, but I'm going to pray it's not for my kids' sake.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. to me, at that moment, there was just nothing that mattered more.
Now, like, when did this actually happen? Was it after you did the trips to the different hospitals, or was it before? I mean, I know your aneurysm happened before, but
you know. Well, here's the thing. You know, it was like the aneurysm. This, I would have to say that probably the near death experience had to happen at the third hospital.
Okay.
You know, mm-hmm. and I think they had to keep me alive on the machines for a minute too. You know, they said that I had passed, and that, you know, like, you know, we thought we lost you for a second there, you know. And, you know, so it was really interesting because, you know, in and out of all this, you know, these different scenarios of being in one hospital to another ambulance to another hospital to another ambulance. And the thing I just innately started to do was throat sing to calm myself down.
Okay.
Which was, which is like this old, you know, it's basically, it's oming, it's chanting, you mm-hmm. know? And I realized I started doing it as a way to just remain calm, mm-hmm. you know, making that sound.
Yeah.
But I realized that when I did that, it would immediately just, it would relieve the pain that I was in.
Wow.
And I realized that what was going on is that when I did that, it was like you're pushing. And when you're pushing, even though your heart's beating while you're in that push, there is no more blood rushing to that broken vessel.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I realized it was, I don't know how, but it was just something that, you know, I'm like, as long as I kept doing this, the pain wouldn't be as bad. And so I just kept doing it. But now, as I'm going in and out of consciousness, I'm opening up my eyes and I'm, you know, hearing the sound, but I'm not making it, you know, and I'm opening up my eyes and looking down at my feet. And I'm wearing a pair of black leather Roman sandals. You know, and I'm in a body of water that is up to my ankles. And this body of water has no waves in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just calm. It looks like glass. And I'm seeing a lot of clouds rolling by. And as I'm looking at my feet, I'm thinking to myself, where did I get these sandals from?
Yeah.
You know, And then I noticed that I had like a white robe, you know, like a white man dress. And I'm like, where did I get this man dress from? And that at that point, it's where am I? And as soon as I had that thought, it's where I heard music. It came out of nowhere. And it was, it sounded like this. It goes, I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go.
Bum, 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 bum.
I'm hearing the Temptations. And it's like life itself is telling me, I refuse to let you go.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just, that song I've heard millions of times before in my life, and it just never, ever once hit me like this. And so I'm looking for a speaker now. I'm looking for a PA system because I'm just like, where is this coming from? So I look to my left and it's just calm water, wet looking sand, and clouds rolling by. And I look to my right and it's the same. So I start to walk to my right. And as I take about, I don't know, about 6 or 7 steps, I feel the ground shake and I turn around and I'm, you know, capturing this giant mountain that was carved into a statue of Zeus.
Wow.
Falling into, like, just splashing into the water like a like an iceberg. And it made this huge splash and it just, like, this coolness just filled me, like just this mistiness and this awe, like, oh my God, that's God. You know, like I was just in complete awe, like, mm-hmm. wow. This, you know, and I'm noticing, like, at the base of the mountain, there's this little old man walking towards me. And he has just a, you know, the shorts, like a shroud, like a toga.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's walking towards me, he's like, you know, maybe about 4 feet tall, very, very pale, very, very thin, and old. And as he's getting closer, you know, I'm seeing his eyes, and they're about to, you know, the eyes are taking up the space of his, not just his socket, but his forehead. You know, they look like alien eyes, wow. You know. I was saying, if you could take the actor E.T.
Mm-hmm.
and combine him with the other actor, Marty Feldman, Igor, young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
AB
you
normal.
You would get a very good idea of what God looked like at that point. And in his eyes, you could see this constant vapor motion in his eyes, like just white clouds moving. And he's blinking his eyes really hard and frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm seeing the clouds in his eyes, I'm thinking to myself, that's how he sees everything. The sky's his eyes, you know? And
that's
then it just
deep.
Hit me too. Like,
that is deep.
Just, And it hit me just how small I am. You know, like here he is in front of me, smaller than me. But really, I'm realizing I'm just a, like a tiny little cell in his eye. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking at me, and he finally breaks the silence by saying, and I'll try to say it in the best version of God that I can.
Okay.
Said it in this very quirky kind of voice. He said, you're not supposed to be here yet.
Wow.
And when he said that, I was like, yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking I should be with my kids right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, nope, it's not your time, but since you're here, I'll show you around.
Wow.
And so he ushers for me to walk with him. And we walk to the right. So he's on my right side and the water on my left. And it just, this feeling of, when, you know, that same kind of feeling that you got when you were a kid and you were among those that loved you, your mom, your dad, your grandparents, that feeling of security,
mm-hmm.
that feeling of just love. And I'm just looking at him like, this is my dad, like, this is, you know.
Wow.
I felt so geek, you know. And as we're walking, we pass this other old man. And this guy is like by the water. He's standing on a flat rock and he's skipping stones off the water. And he, like, best description I could say for him is that, you know, he looked like a very, very old 80, 90 year old man But he was dressed in like a Nacho Libre outfit. Like he had red trunks, blue leggings, and then his boots. Mm-hmm. He had them off. You know, he was barefoot. But as we walked by, I was just like, who's that? You know? And God was just like, you don't have to worry about it. And so when he said that, just like that, too, I was like thinking, well, cool. I ain't got to worry about the old guy with the red trunks.
Yeah.
And as soon as we walked by him is when we were no longer on this beach setting, but we were in outer space. You know, now I'm looking at the sun to my left, and it's like the size of a giant beach ball, you know. And to my right, I'm looking at the earth, and it's like the size of a, you know, softball, grapefruit, you know. Like we are clearly by the sun. And I'm looking at God, and half of his body is just golden, reflecting the sun, the sunlight, and he's just, you know, gold. Yeah. Like I'm just like, wow. He's got this, you know, with his eyes being so big, his hairline starts really up high, but his hair goes all the way down to his middle of his back, and it is like, it's silver, white, and it's curly. But when I say curly, it's like stringy curly. Mm-hmm. But when you're in outer space, all of this hair is just floating like if you were not like underwater mm-hmm. or outer space. So I'm just looking at him and just looking at him and looking at the earth with the sun behind me. And he's looking at me and he's looking at the sun. And he's telling me, he's like, you have a lot of people praying for you right now. He's like, your kids are praying for you right this moment. And then he gave me that universal shoulder shrug. And he's like, and it's just not your time.
Wow.
And I was like, well, if you're telling me it's not my time to go, then I want to make sure that I share this experience with everybody down there and pointing at the earth. I'm like, I know so many people just sitting on the fence about you. If they were to hear this experience from me, then I'd get them off the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a lot of people who know me aren't somebody, you know, don't necessarily see me as like, oh, he's a Bible thumper, mm-hmm. you know, or he's a church guy. Everybody knows Razor Ray's a mad sinner. You know, mad sinning, you know, and forgiven.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful for that. You know, that's just the thing now. It's like, that experience happened, and ever since then, you know, it's, you know, my life has not been the same.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but when, you know, he told me that, I told him I was going to share this experience with everybody. He said, I know you will, my son. And that's when he gave me this hug. That's the only time he ever touched me was at that moment. He hugged me. And it was at that very moment that I opened up my eyes. That's the crazy part, is that that hug sent me right back.
Yeah.
Wow.
And when I opened up my eyes, I'm catching my baby sister, God rest her soul, Terry, and she is crying next to me. She's crying. She's looking down. She's in prayer. And I saw her. And the first thing I say is, oh, I know I must be fucked up if you're here.
Oh, no.
I was like, sister, I was just with God. I just saw God. He just gave me a hug. He said it wasn't my time yet. You know, and everybody starts coming in the room, doctors and nurses are like, congratulations, Mr. Reyes. We thought we lost you, you know, and I was like, no, I was just with God. He said, it's not my time yet. And he's like, who wants to check out my jelly boner? So that was pretty, I mean, that's.
So you got know, the hose.
Yeah, I got the hose and the penis thing. And, brutal. But that, I mean, that it couldn't be like, you couldn't have just like, it could not be any more opposite of coming out of that experience with, I just saw God.
Yeah.
And who wants to check out my jelly boner? Jeez.
The Ray is back.
Right.
I'm back.
But, you know, I have to say, it's, you know, strange things that happened after that. as in the sense of like, I started to notice there were certain things that were, it seemed that after all of this, like, I'll just go ahead and put it like this.
Yeah.
That moment when I came up, and it very well might have been just before I even said something to my sister, like, you know, made that comment. I remember, like, waking up and doing one of those arm pumps, like, yes. Like, you know, I fucking did it. I
made
it. I'm back. And when I did that, I remember thinking to myself, at what cost? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I am, that was the next question of, like, what's this going to be? What's this price going to be, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get shown this amazing, you know,
Nirvana.
Right. And there has to be some price for it. You know what I'm saying?
But I almost think that in a way, because of your life and because of the people that you know and all the experiences you had before that, it was almost like you were chosen because there's so many people that you know and so many people you can help. You know?
Well, you know, I think I've definitely has found that experience has helped a lot of people, but it's, you know, I've had a lot of people, especially during this whole Corona pandemic crisis, I've had a number of friends who I haven't heard from in a long time, just reaching out, first checking to see how I'm doing, but also like, you know, letting me know that experience and my, you know, testimony is giving them some, you know, some newfound strength, you know, it's strengthened their faith and it's given them some more hope.
Yeah.
Now, how has it affected, you know, your outlook on life?
Well, you know, as I was saying, you know, that fist pump of wondering like, okay, cool, I made it, but also like at what price? And the way it's affected is this, it's that I've lost. Okay, get ready for this list. You know, after that aneurysm and after me coming back, I lost my mom. I lost my dad. I lost my sister, Terry, who was right there when I came out. I lost my brother to cancer. And I lost my best friend who was quitting heroin. And his brother and his father. So they were like, you know, brothers and the father too.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just an extreme amount of people that I was seeing going. Like a lot. And to be, you know, I mean, I understand, you know, we get up there and we start to lose people. But this was happening at such a high frequency and, you know, it wasn't just distant relatives. This is all very much in my circle. And it was when it got to the point of my goddaughter, you know, Camber Jean, she is, you know, I was out playing guitar for Insane Clown Posse on the Bizarre Bizarre tour when she was, you know, when she became my goddaughter. So I wasn't even around for, you know, someone had to sit in for me because I was out like playing rock star somewhere, you know, but, you know, this is someone who was very dear to me. And when she died after losing just a number of people already is the only time where I ever asked God why.
Yeah.
Not, I was, and it was not, why are you taking her? It was, why am I still here? And you're taking away these, you know, someone young and so much love and life to give, you know, I, you know, I'm not trying to sound ungrateful, Lord, but I'm trying to, you know, help me understand that.
Yeah.
And then it was his voice again. It was a very clear, And he had said, in 4 to 5 years, my son, people won't believe I exist.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, I was like, God, what's going to happen in 4 to 5 years that is going to put the world at such a state? And look where we are at right now.
Exactly.
You know that?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
You know, so how has this changed me? How has that experience changed me? Well, it's allowed me to accept the fact that when people die, that I'm going to see them again. You know, that it's not a, wonder or a hope, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's that knowing in your heart that you're going to be there.
You know, it doesn't take away, doesn't take any of the tears away.
No.
But those tears have learned to be tears of gratitude versus like just tears of sorrow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, it's a sorrowful time, but at the same time, I'm very much aware of like, what's on the other side, you know, I got a little peek over it, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, he gave me a hug.
Yeah.
I mean, so I feel so blessed.
Yeah. Right.
But believe me, it was losing all these people and losing all this close family that I knew. It was like, my God, what is going to happen? You know? And then, you know, when that 4 to 5 year mark came, we're definitely right now in year like 4.75.
Wow.
You know, she died in January, February. Yeah. So we're really close to that. And my thought was like, okay, we're going to get hit by a big meteor or okay, we're going to, you know, nuclear bomb or okay. You know, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
But any of those things are such a possibility at the moment that it's not absurd to say. I don't sound like a crazy conspiracist by saying it right now.
Oh no, this is 2020. Who knows what's going to happen? Right. Monkeys exactly. could fall from the sky.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh man. I hope it doesn't land in my ear.
Right. So do you have any fear of death now, like for yourself?
No. It's actually very much. Well, that's the thing now. It's like everybody is gone on the other side. I mean, I still got a good amount of family and friends here that I can enjoy and be grateful for. But that party is really swelling up on the other side that it's like, there's no fear.
Yeah.
You know, there was some, you know, when last year, when all this stuff had happened with Dana, it was such a weird event. I mean, first of all, it was a Friday the 13th, you know, mm-hmm. and I remember specifically not going out that evening just to stay away from all the craziness. And for me, I was in the garage, turned to a studio with headphones on and working on music. So I couldn't hear anything that was going on, you know?
Yeah.
And then by the time I found out what was going on, you know, it was, you know, things that quickly had just went straight tragedy. And, you know, just that feeling of knowing that right there that she is back home.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, there's no way to make any sense of it other than just that I leave it just to God.
No.
You had any strange or prolific dreams since then?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't really dream too much that I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
It's seems to you know, as soon as if I do have a dream, it's usually pretty much forgotten.
Yeah.
Right away. So I'm not really too good at just remembering any of the dreams.
Yeah, because
they say sometimes people who have passed on come into your dreams like as a visitation.
Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what thinking too, is when I've talked to other people that had NDEs or near-death experiences, their dreams got really vivid in that too. So that's what we were wondering.
You know what? I'd have to say I have a sister, you know, and she is, about a year younger than me. And we were really, really close. And she's got that gift of talking, you know, being able to speak to the other side and hear what they're, you know. And so there were some pretty intense moments where, you know, like what would happen with her is if, you know, she would get messages to me from Dana. And what would happen with her is that her arms would just, she'd get goosebumps and her hairs would start standing. And then she would just close her eyes and she's like, brother, she's here, you know? Mm-hmm. And then she would lay, you know, tell me what I needed to hear, you know, about what had happened and, you know, and that she was okay. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy because when this was this is all happening during my, driving back to my house from my kid's house. Mm-hmm. And while we're driving, it's wintertime and there's some snow on the houses, you know, there's flurries of snow like around people's houses. And it was so crazy because of the house that we were driving right up to, like the snow that had flurried up on top of the house spelled out the name Ramon.
Oh, really?
She's like, look, brother, she's trying to tell you something.
Wow.
You know, it was, as I was telling you before, that first night of coming back to that house was the understanding that I gotta forgive this man. Like, I can't hold on to this, you know, these ill feelings. I'm not gonna do well.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
You can't let it just rip you apart.
Yeah.
Right. And I felt like there was, and it, honestly, I felt like it was like I was being told what to do by somebody else. Like, you know, I felt like I was definitely being, I could definitely feel God being right there. But I could also feel Dana too. I could feel her spirit.
Wow.
And there were just some moments of, you know, that first night of coming back home and you're alone and you know, and it's a house of horror. And I just remember just having like, you know, the TV on really loud, you know, and having this feeling of her stepdad who had, you know, committed all this horrible crimes and who was also, you know, at that point too, you know, had been deceased. And I could sense his spirit in the house.
Wow.
Like an anger, a sadness and an anger, you know, angry, sad of what he did and angry about it. But also he was angry that, you know, that, you know, family members rifled through his stuff and, you know, burnt some of his stuff and, you know, broke some of his stuff as a way of like just dealing with the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was an actual, like, you know, an argument of, like, dude, you're going to be upset about your clothes and all this shit after everything you've done, you know?
Right.
You know,
but like, people react different, you know?
Right. And I just felt that. I just felt like you're not, you know, I'm like, you're not welcome here. I'm like, I prayed to God I'm not going to judge you, but you're not going to be welcome here.
Yeah.
So in God's name and mm-hmm. in the name of Jesus, leave. And I could just feel his sorrow. Like I felt his sadness. I felt bad. You know, like obviously, just like everything was feeling bad, but I just felt like, man. And it was at that moment that all of this was happening, like during the fight scene of Star Wars, you know, where, you know, Luke and Darth Vader are having it out. And, mm-hmm. you know, he has that opportunity to finish him off, and he doesn't.
Yeah. Right.
You know, he had his opportunity to go to the dark side. And that's kind of where I felt like I was at. I felt like, man, the synchronicities are
I was just thinking of that, yeah. Because like, that whole show is, like, about religion.
Yeah.
You know, the Force.
Absolutely. So I'm watching that, and it's just like, oh, my God, you know. And so naturally, after that insane exchange, you know, I just like had to change the fucking television, you know, and of course, where does the next channel land? It lands on that scene of Ghost with Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze's Ghost. Oh my God! I'm like, damn. I'm like, you got me. Once again, feeling like a bitch.
Oh, and you're like, really, God? Really? Are you really? Just, you know,
totally
you could have put on Bambi, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, that right there was, you know, I definitely feel her. It mm-hmm. was, it's insane. You know, I don't know if it's insane. Maybe I'm insane, but the thing is, you know, with Dana, one of the things that we had this connection. I don't know if you ever had a connection with somebody that you could close your eyes and you just knew where they were or what they're thinking or what they're feeling.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the kind of connection. Like, it was there like that. And, you know, there was this period of our relationship where, you know, where I was going through so much. Like, you know, after like the loss of about 5 or 6 family members, I was definitely not somebody that I wanted to be around, you know, anybody, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get to that point of grief, you don't want to be around anybody. You feel like you know, like your energy is just bringing everybody's energy down too. So you try to just kind of, you know, isolate yourself. And that's kind of what I was doing at that point. I was just like,
Have you channeled any of everything that you've gone through into any music? Has this inspired you to be creative or write?
It has been. You know, here's the thing is that, you know, a friend of mine, Charmy Golson, and I have been working on this book, A Journey to Heaven's Shore, for about 3 years now. And we had to take a little bit of a break because she had lost her significant other and you know, needed some time for grief and you know, deal with all of that. But right around the time that she was ready to deal, you know, getting back on the book is when I started, you know, dealing with my stuff.
Yeah.
So it's been quite a, you know, a healing process of getting this book done. And, you know, the book itself is called A Journey to Heaven's Shore. And it's going to basically kind of detail my, you know, sort of like my life story in a lot of ways, describing some of the things that I had seen, some paranormal type of activities that had gone in my life that I had questioned why. And wondered why, and then kind of after the aneurysm, it kind of answered all of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it details the near death experience, but it also kind of, you know, details the story of somebody who was like trying to go for, you know, that celebrity rock star, you know, status, and and getting so close each time and just like just falling short for one reason or another, you know. And you know, realizing that that wasn't God's plan at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you, you like know? Growing up and you know, into your young adulthood, did you ever have a belief in the paranormal? Did you believe in ghosts? Was that of interest to you at all?
Yes. You know, it was interesting because, you know, I was, adopted when I was two, and I was adopted into my father's family, mm-hmm. taken away from my mother. And it was after that, during that time of adjustment into the new family, you know, that I was having some, you know, had some crazy visitations, you know, one particular one, and this is actually in the book, is a detail of an evening where I'm probably about 4 or 5 years old. All of my older siblings, really they're aunts and uncles, but they're, you know, siblings now because I'm adopted. Mm-hmm. And they're getting home from work and school and, you know, mom's in the kitchen making dinner. And my oldest brother, who was also a godfather to me, he had a really twisted sense of humor. You know, some say that he fell off a car when he was younger and hit his head and he had never been right since. So whatever it was, you know, my brother Chon was just like, you know, when you die, you're going to hell. I'm like, who says that to a little kid?
Yeah. Right.
You know, but he told me that. And when he said that, I was very much offended. I was like, no, I'm not. I'm going with God. I'm going to be in heaven. He's like, no, you're going to hell. And he starts to like, starts to laugh. And I'm getting upset. Then all of a sudden I'm hearing a knock at the door. And I go to the front door to look. And I'm seeing this gentleman, white man with a pinstripe mustache. And he's like in this black tuxedo, kind of like the, with the nice coattails, you know. you know, greased back hair, but you could see little horns just at, like right at like the devil's peak.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just smiling. He's just smiling. He's looking at me like, just come on, let's go. And I was just like, Mom, you know, naturally my mom comes out of the kitchen and she's like, what is it? And, you know, speaking to me in Spanish, mm-hmm. She's like, what is it? And I tell her, I'm just pointing. And she sees who it is, and immediately she grabs me and puts me behind her and does the sign of the cross. And she's telling them in Spanish that this is the house of the Lord. People, you know, of God are here, and you have no business here, and you're not welcomed. And he was just like, well, I'm not here for you guys. I'm just here for the boy, you know? And I was just like, fuck. I grabbed my mom, like, tighter. And she's like, well, he's not going with you. And then she went into a prayer, like it was a Spanish prayer. And he just smiled, stepped off the porch, and then went up in like a green flame, and it went through the cracks of the sidewalk. And all of a sudden, it was like,
I got goosebumps right now.
Girl, it was like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the evening, right? But when he left, it turned to dark. It was like 9, 10 o'clock at night. Like that. That's and I was just crazy. Like, and then, you know, I remember neighbors coming over and talking to my mom, and, you know, my mom looking totally freaked out, right?
Yeah.
But that was it. And the next thing I remember is waking up the following morning, you know, like, wait a second, when did I go to sleep? She's like, you fell asleep on the couch. I'm like, what was the devil doing here last night, Mom? She's like, you're crazy. There was no devil here last night. I'm like, I don't believe you. I just didn't. I had that feeling, you know. And, you know, strange enough, right around that same time, too, I was sleeping at my dad's house, my uncle. I remember sleeping with my sister Irma. We were sleeping. And all of a sudden I hear like someone scratching on the screen, on the window, you know? So I open up the curtain and it's a fucking clown.
Oh no.
Oh my. I'm going to have nightmares tonight.
It's a clown with lights underneath it. And he's just kind of got this look like, come on, let's go. And I just remember just shutting, like I just shut the curtain and went right back to sleep underneath the blanket, you know, I'm just like, you know. So I had always wondered, like, what were those things about? And I found it pretty funny when I was asked to join the Insane Clown
I was just
posse.
Thinking that.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing, like a precursor.
Okay. You know what?
It was a premonition.
I told those guys that story back when they asked me to join. I was like, yo, man, I got to tell you guys this crazy-ass story. And they were just like, wow. Like, that was the Dark Carnival, dog. That's the shit we've been talking about.
Yeah. And I just, you know, it's funny because I don't know his name, but the lead, one of the lead Insane Clown Posse guys, I met him at an event and he was carrying a poodle around. And he was doing, you know, stuff with the Humane Society or something. And I never forget that Dana Forrester introduced me to him. She's like, "Hey, he's in Insane Clown Posse." And I'm like, "This guy's carrying a poodle."
You know what? That guy is a huge he's a big animal lover.
Okay.
Like, he's got dogs that he's picked up from on tour, you know.
Wow.
That would just come home and like, okay, you know, so yeah, he's good like that.
But it's just like we said in the beginning, it's the Motor City Music family, you know, it's right. The it's, love exactly. They put out, people think, oh, these rockers and all that, but they're actually, if you get to know people, they're really good people.
Well, you know how I got, you know who I got, actually, it's kind of interesting. We got their attention, Insane Clown Posse's attention, when we, as my band Harm's Way and the Life Sucks Get High family, we had recorded a record with Kid Rock, and he produced it and DJ'd on it. And this was like 94. So this was actually like really early on before like whole rap rock thing was even really a thing. And I remember we had sent our record out to a few few companies, and Psychopathic Records ended up calling us back. They were like, yo, you know, we got this CD, and like, it's, you know, we want you guys to do some shows with us. And it was them reaching out like that that kind of started the whole, you know, relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but once again, it was that, you know, us working with Kid Rock, they've kind of got the, you know, like, oh, wait a second, you guys work with them, we work with them. And, you know, it's, yeah, it's a bunch of incest.
But in a good way.
But in a good musical way, right. Not in a Southern kind of way.
No, I, you know, it's, I just think that, you know, being in the Midwest is, people are just starving for a creative outlet because there's not a whole lot going on, you know, like in the Midwest, like it's cold in the winter and there's nowhere to go. And you just have this need for self-expression and creativity to, you know, pass the time in these mind-numbing winter days, right?
Yep. It's true.
Yeah, definitely.
You don't get to paradise without any suffering.
That's right.
That's true.
You know, okay, so let's go a little woo-woo here.
Yeah, let's go woo-woo.
Where do you think heaven is? I mean, do you ever think about that?
Do I think we're Kevin?
No, heaven.
Oh.
You know, is it?
You know what?
Because we always say, well, go up to heaven. Or...
I thought, you know what? I thought that was very interesting that I was coming from the sun.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I mean, because, you know, I thought about that too. I was like, wow. So, you know, you die, you leave your body, and you shoot up to heaven? Or you shoot up to, the, like, this one place where is a crossover?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I felt like I always wondered, I'm like, what would have happened if I would have just decided to gone swimming?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, was that the, is it, and I wondered, is that the River Styx? Was that the, you know, the Jordan River? You know, I'm like, and, you know, where, you know, in biblical terms, where might have I been?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, seeing that, I was so close to the sun after that walk, I always look at, I don't even look at the sun the same anymore. You know, like I look at the sun and I'm thinking, yeah, somewhere out there, that's where all of my loved ones are at. Danny Cake's up there.
Yeah.
You know, so I got to say, I think it's, I think heaven's probably that way.
Okay.
By the sun.
Yeah.
I mean, they always say it's like they always speak of like a place of like it's always bright and daylight, you know, no darkness. So, man, that does kind of sound like the sun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, definitely. Now, do you find that you said that you were in a Facebook group with people who have had the same experience? Is there any similarities to your experience and other people's experiences? Or do you find like everybody's having their own experience?
It, you know what, it really does seem that a lot of folks are having their own experience.
Okay.
You know, I think I heard of one experience that was really similar to mine, where they experienced someone that had big blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, and that's the thing too, it's like I don't even look at the sky the same. You know, I look at the sky and I'm thinking, man, that's his eyes. I'm like,
yeah,
he totally see me. You know, and I'll it's crazy to think that all of this has happened, and then you have a, like I said before, you got this crazy pandemic that it's like, all right, if your experience hasn't been tested enough, let's just go ahead and throw this at you.
Right. Let me throw this wrench in your plans, right?
Yeah.
Y'all are enjoying yourselves way too much.
Way too much. Wait a second. You guys are way too much laughing. No, but I feel that it's definitely has helped me to get through, you know, this whole experience, that having that one experience. Like I was telling a friend, I'm like talking to them. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, I know I would not be here right now. I would have done something stupid by now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and it's not that I don't get sad or anything like that, but I can also recognize that, man, I could see where I have a choice, you know? And if I choose to look at it this way, all I'm going to do is just, here, Dana, go. Come on, baby. You already done been on this side. Why are you beating yourself up?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, a lot of experiencers
right.
have said they want to get back so bad. That's the only, they just want to get back there. And mm-hmm. But they know that they cannot take their own life because that's not the way to do it. You won't go back.
Right. I just felt like, you know what? I thought about that. I believe me, like, when something like that happens, when something this as tragic as what we experienced last year, you know, I got to say thank God that, you know, he's given and protected us, our family, from any more of that insanity. And, you know, the type of, you know, how suicide goes right up with that type of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, believe me, you know, I've gotten, it's not like I haven't thought about it, but I've thought about it enough to know that if I were to completely follow through with it, it would be such a disappointing trip for me to go back to God and say, oops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know, and then knowing what it would, and then knowing the kind of devastation that it would leave behind on my family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I just, you know what? I'm here for a reason, you know, and I understand that my reason here is to let people know, kind of like, you know, take away some of that fear of death.
Yeah, and a message of hope too. You know, it's like
it's complete hope.
If we don't have hope and we don't have faith, like, you know, what else do we have?
I was thinking about it. Hope is the greatest. To me, I think hope has probably got to be the greatest of all blessings.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, love's there, but you can't have love without some hope.
Right. Yeah, right? Absolutely. And, you know, we just really, really appreciate, you know, you sharing your story with us, because we have a lot of listeners that, you know, are very open to different experiences, and we're all on this path of seeking what else is out there, especially in the paranormal. We are,
right.
What's on the other side? What, you know, people ghost hunt and they, you know, want to connect with maybe loved ones on the other side. And, you know, you bring forth your experience, I think is going to give a lot of like interesting thought, sparking conversation and hope for some of our people who
you were saying some things, and then just it kind of, you know, it reminded me of something too that I wanted to share, is that, you know, there are definitely, you know, God exists, but there's definitely, like, you know, a lot of darkness in this planet, on this world, and, you know, and you know, we could either be devils or we could be angels to each other, and really that's it. You know, I just find myself in a constant state of just staying grateful to God for that experience, because I know it's what's given me the strength to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I remember, here I was trying to remember what I was trying to talk to you about, is that about, I want to say maybe about 4 or 5 months after my experience, was noticing just weird things were happening, paranormal things.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were asking, here was a paranormal experience for you. I was sleeping with Dana. I woke up in the middle of the night and I pulled the pillow from her while she was sleeping and like twisted her neck and then went right back to bed. That is something that I thought was a dream. Now, Dana told me a completely different story. She said that she woke up to the pillow being pulled underneath her, you know, so she woke up with her neck getting twisted. And then she said when she looked at me, she said my eyes were wide open, but they were black.
Wow.
Like there was no whites in them. And she said that my skin was a red, like a deep red. And she said when I was breathing that I sounded like a beast.
Jeez.
And I was just like, I felt so bad, you know, like the next morning I'm like, you know, she's telling me all this and I'm like, I thought that was a dream, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't control it. And so about a month later I go down on a visit to visit family in Texas, and I go to see my little brother Julio, who is you know, he's a bit of a medicine man himself in the spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's like my sister. He's got a lot of that gift.
Mm-hmm.
And, he said, right when I entered his home, he's like, dude, I could feel you from, he's like, I was in the restroom and I could feel you walk in and the air just got really cold.
Wow.
It got really cold and stiff. And so when he walked out, he's looking at me and he's not looking at me. He's looking over me. He's like, dude, he's like, can I burn some sage around you? I'm like, please do, brother. I'm like, he's like, you got demons around you, bro. I'm like, I'm seeing all this dark shadows around you.
Wow.
And so we went to the backyard and we started burning some sage. And he's like, damn, man. He's like, they're sending him messages. And he's like, yep, they're telling me that they don't want you to share your experience because you're giving hope to the world. And they don't like that. And then he took the sage that was burning and he put it right up to my third eye, right up to my forehead.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see like it looked like somebody was taking a huge drag off of it. All of a sudden it started to ember, and then it would catch a flame.
Dang.
And then he would put it away from my forehead and it would die. Wow. And then he would put it back to my forehead and it would catch a flame again. And he's like, damn, dude. He's like, you got it bad. And then he did the same thing to my heart, and it was doing the same thing. And I was just like, it's like they don't want you to share your experience, you know. But after that moment of, you know, burning the sage and in prayer, you know, I could feel a lift.
Nice.
And I definitely felt like, oh, like I could breathe again. And I was just like, thank you, brother.
Yeah.
And he's just looking over me. He's like, yeah, they're not there no more, man.
That's awesome.
That is.
Yeah.
Because
so that means there's your paranormal.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely. But you know what? They can't stop the 222 Paranormal Podcast and Razor Ray from spreading this message.
That's right. Triple two in the house.
That's right.
Woo. Hey, what is, you know what? I always look up in the numerology and meanings and numbers. What's the 222 meaning?
So 222, a couple meanings. So like we're using it because it's my birthday. It's my lucky number.
Oh, cool.
But in numerology and paranormal, if you start seeing 222, it has a couple things. One, it may be an indication that you're going to have a paranormal experience.
Oh.
And then two is, it's an affirmation that you're on the right path or you're moving in the direction that you need to be going. So if you're thinking about something and maybe you're thinking I should do this and is this the right thing to do? And then you start seeing 222 in succession or, you know, a lot, it's popping in unexpectedly or randomly, then it's just an affirmation from the other side saying, hey, you know what? You're on the right path.
On the right path. I like
which it. Just made me think. What was the date of your aneurysm?
It was February 19th.
Uh-huh.
Wow. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, February
19th, 2013. Yeah, so on the 19th it happened, and then God put you on that path on the 22nd.
Yeah.
Well, here we are.
Here we are. It all makes sense now. It all came together. We just wrapped it up in a big bow, and here's your gift. Razor Ray. But no, we, you know, Joe and I really, really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story. And, you know, anytime that you want to come back, if you ever want to go real deep and real woo-woo.
When the book comes out, we want you back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When that book gets ready to come on out, I'd love to come through here and, you know, we can do this.
I was so hoping to do this in person.
Yes.
But
so much COVID.
So much COVID, I get.
Stupid Rona.
Damn Rona.
She's out. Well,
you know, hopefully we can, you know, get together next year.
Absolutely.
When this book gets out, we can, you know, be able to all be able to enjoy each other's company in one place.
Yeah.
That's right. I want big hugs. I don't want any of these polite little teeny hugs. I want everybody. Right. I want big bear hugs.
I don't want no elbow bump.
That's right. But no, just, you know, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks. Thank you. I appreciate y'all.
Yeah. We love you, brother. I mean, we mean that, you know, and
big love to the 222.
I've been trying to talk to you for a long time, and I'm just so glad that we finally got the chance to do it.
I am too, my man. Right. Thank you again for staying on. Really, I mean, you understand that the 21st is, we're going to have some serious major activity going on on December 21st, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And I'm sure you guys are all aware about that.
Yeah.
And so even more so awesome that you were able to parlay this message to the world just beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Check out Ray on Facebook.
Yep, you can find, just search Journey to Heaven Shore on Facebook, and you'll find a page that we have set up. My friend Charmy Goulson and I, who have been working on this book, she's been working on getting this site together. So, you know, it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, little by little. I got holes in my head, so I'm always, like, operating just like that. But she's definitely helping quite a bit to moving things and getting the word out there. And, you know, and it's just interesting enough now because the word is starting to do its own thing. Like I've had people, like I said before, I've just had other people have reached out and express how it's given them hope.
Yeah.
You know, and that they've shared it with other people when they're going through, seems like when death is around, this is a good thing to check out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since it's death's around quite often,
but I always say, you know, when I talk to people that have loved ones that pass and all that, I always say, you know, it's not that they're gone. They're just not here.
Right.
And you'll see them again soon.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much again. It's been, it's been an absolute pleasure being on your show. And, you know, I'll be looking forward to getting back on, especially when we get this book ready.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Sounds good.
All right, Ray. Well, thanks a lot. Like I said, love you, brother. And
love you too. Big big shout outs, big loves to everybody out there. Yeah. Big shout outs to the Ray Ray Tribe and to the Detroit music scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll leave you with some 60 Second Crush in honor of Dimebag Darrell, Murder in Ohio from 60 Second Crush. Goodbye, everyone.
Get your boo.
Yeah. Peace.